I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15 now, Wednesday morning, September 4th. Rapidly approaching the end of the third quarter of the year, Ronald Surpass, our guest, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, consultant to many departments, and we like to pick his brain every week, talk about crime in the city. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Tommy, I was great until you reminded me it's almost time to pay the third quarter estimate taxes. You know, the Bible said that God expects 10% tithing. Mm-hmm. I think I pay a whole lot more of that to the state and federal government.
Yeah, I'm a little lax on those quarterly payments. I should and I don't. And the accountant says, well, why? And I don't know. But don't. You know. Anyway, so 8 people shot in New Orleans early Sunday morning, 6 women, one of whom later died. Is this kind of thing, Chief, when it comes to crime, just an anomaly and you have spurts of violent crime like this?
You know, in the last 12 to 18 months, this might be considered an anomaly because things have been going better for the city of New Orleans and the policing and the public. But across the history of New Orleans, these are not anomalies. They happen frequently. They don't happen with the predictability, obviously, because if you could stop those shootings, wouldn't you? What it continues to show us is that people who choose to use weapons illegally are not encumbered by any fear. And that's what drives a lot of people to the question is, has the criminal justice lost on observation by people on the streets that there's a sense of consequence or there's a sense of responsibility for doing the things everybody knows you're not supposed to do, shoot at a car full of people? So it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think it's just a little bit of both.
So tell me about your thoughts on as we approach the final month of the third quarter on the way crime is trending in the city.
It looks like it's going to continue to go down, and that's very powerful and it's very important. But we're cautioned by a brand new Pew Research report, which once again points out that people get their sense of crime from friends and neighbors, a little bit less local media. So when national figures talk about crime going down, it washes over your city's population as if it never happened. When people are getting their crime reconciliation from what do they hear from their friends and family, that's probably the closest we get to getting a 100% picture of crime, if you will, because only half of crime in America goes reported. That's been the same since 1970s, unbroken. So on the one hand, crime data is slow, it's old, and it always trails people's perceptions. Now confidence with not only 40 years of experience, but another series of polls done by very good independent middle of the road pollsters, Pew, that says, folks, people feel crime how their neighbors talk, how their family talk, how their friends talk, and what they see in their local news. Summing that all up, this event over the weekend reminds people that we still have a long way to go before we feel safe.
What else did a Pew report show?
That local news is by and large more trusted than national news. National news trust is well below a third now. It's just The trust that American citizens have in the national media is a train wreck. It looks like a plane that's on a steep descent to land. It's just been horrible over the last 10 to 15 years. Local news, however, still continues to be something that people have more trust in. They don't trust it like you would think, but they trust it more. So when you think of those two things together and you hear these national talking heads and you hear this national conversation about crimes going down, you should feel better. I'm reminded of a couple of weeks ago, Don Lemon, who's working for somebody now, interviews somebody on a boardwalk in New Jersey and says, well, how do you feel about the economy? And the guy looks at Don Lemon and says, the economy sucks. And Don Lemon says to him, no, it doesn't. The data says you should be feeling better. And the guy just looked at him and laughed. Well, that's what happens with crime. When you have these national talking heads about crime, that doesn't affect how you feel in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans. That doesn't affect how you feel in, you know, North Nashville and Nashville. So it's a night and day difference the way these messages are transferred from the government to the people. And Tommy, my experience as a chief always was this. Crime data helps you explain a story, but if you lay on that as your measure of success, you're never going to be able to really reach all the people in your community.
So how, as a law enforcement, how does law enforcement get a real accurate picture from
That's a great question, Tommy. I probably participated in thousands of community meetings as a deputy chief and a chief. I required all of my field commanders to be in community meetings. There was actually a ComStat metric. How many community groups have you built this year? Not the ones you've been singing to the choir every year. Great people. But how many have you built? And by doing that, we knew very granular at the neighborhood level from direct conversations supplemented by data, not led by data, where commanders could say to me, hey, look, in East Nashville, we're doing better. People feel better. And sure enough, 6 months later, a year later, the data that the government produces, which is always late, would show better data. But we knew long before. And conversely, Tommy, sometimes we would be talking to neighborhoods and they would be saying, we don't feel safe at all. Well, the crime data doesn't look that way. And they'd say, I don't care what the crime data looks like. I'm telling you, we don't feel safe in our neighborhood. So you see it goes in both directions. The key is police leadership in those neighborhoods, in those meetings, solving problems, prioritizing problems, creating solutions are the better barometer than static polling data.
And we're going to take a break here, but as you say that you can, if you knew what was going to happen, you'd stop it before it happened. But I would think that it all comes down to communications between the officers and the community and law enforcement in the community. And once you learn or once that communication happens, then you can spot trends. You can spot the troublemakers, and maybe it could lead to a preventative aspect of that. We're talking to Ronald Serpas, professor, practice department of criminal justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, picking his mind about crime as we do every Wednesday morning. Any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. Right now, time for traffic on WWE.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
For you all. 826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Ronald Serpas, our friend, professor, practice department of criminal justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief and head of other departments, pick his brain about crime every week. And, Chief, somebody texted in and said, you'll never be able to convince the people that are afraid to come to New Orleans, even if the statistics show that crime is down. I tend to think a lot of people might be more verbal about being afraid to come to New Orleans, but when an opportunity arises, they do come into the city. Thoughts?
Well, I think a lot of cities can be said like that, right? I mean, it's a personal decision where you move and where you go. But New Orleans is very negatively affected by this 40 years of being in and out of the top three murder capitals. That frightens people, as you would expect. And it frightens citizens, as you would expect. But when we were talking about how do you measure a department's success, independent polling of citizen satisfaction was always the most important measure. The 4 years I was chief, Tommy, believe it or not, our team had an average of 57% satisfaction done by independent poll. And after we left to where we are today, it's down to 45%. That affects how people feel about the city, right? You had 57% satisfied over 4 years of policing in New Orleans. And over the last 7 years, it's 45%. That changes how people interpret in a conversation like you just had. They might say to a friend, I don't feel safe here. You may not want to move here. But I think at the end, people are going to move where they want to move.
How much crime is retaliatory? And what I mean by that is, or the reason I ask that is...
Great question.
You might not even... This may have nothing to do with you at all. It sounds terrible that eight people got shot and you think that you could be a target or a subject, but unless you're in the wrong area at the wrong time. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not trying to minimize it at all. Go ahead.
No. We've been witnessing this since the middle of 2010. That the use of a firearm in the 80s and 90s, it was one person, one gun, one bullet against one enemy. And unfortunately, for whatever reason in America over the last 20 years, these younger people are not interested in one bullet, one gun, one victim. They're interested in, I'm going to shoot the guy, and I don't care who's around. Like we talked about last week, I didn't shoot you enough in Baton Rouge. Now I see you on Bourbon Street, I'm going to shoot you again. So that's what unfortunately happened with this horrible tragedy of the mother. She probably is in the wrong place at the wrong time with someone who does not likely have a legal right or certainly didn't have a legal right to use a weapon that way. It's really fascinating that My cousin is an emergency room physician for the last 30 years now. If you called her and said, how many people who are beat up in your emergency room didn't know who did it? She would probably say to you, well, they all know who did it, right? Violent crime is normally very personal between people who have some relationship. But the shooting we saw of this terrible tragedy of this young mother of four who was pregnant likely was a spur of the moment, hot off, pop cap, just anger. And she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. We see this in Chicago every weekend with babies being killed, in New Orleans with babies being killed. And that, to me, is where police chiefs have always stood on the line of, look, we're not interested in a Democrat point, a Republican point, or a Second Amendment point. What we're interested in are people who have a illegal use of a weapon. That's what the question is. Did they illegally use it? And that's where you see these horrible tragedies.
Yeah, a text comes in. We don't have any more time today, but we'll pick it up next week, perhaps. Somebody texted and said, I was on a trial for a jury for a trial once, and two shootings that were on trial, a guy shot 100 rounds, only one bullet hit somebody. And that brings me to the point, and this is strictly a theoretical exercise, but the guns are out there. You can't get them back. Genie's out of the bottle. But if, for whatever reason, they had never gotten out there, what would crime look like in the United States or in New Orleans if, for example, people were limited to only a revolver and that's it? And I know I'm not trying to infringe on anybody's Second Amendment right or anything else. I'm just playing a what-if game. Ronald Surpass, our guest, will take a break. Come back. We'll talk to him next week. When we come back, we'll talk to Keith Hinckley, president of Plaquemines Parish, about the dreaded saltwater wedge. Also check in with the National Weather Service. Right now, time for WWL First News. Much like a hovering spaceship, the gray clouds have moved in over the downtown area. Kevin Gilmore joins us now, meteorologist at the National Weather Service. And Kevin, good morning, first of all, to you. How you doing?
Hey, doing good, Tommy. How are you?
I'm all right. I remember back in the day where it rained and all we had to do was say, well, it's going to rain, be careful, put the windshield wipers on and all that. But now it seems like the rains are more intense. The big catch basins maybe aren't maintained as well. Parking on a neutral ground. It ain't like it used to be, is it, Kevin?
No, not definitely not. We're definitely in this rainy pattern, and we got a lot more of these showers and storm chances coming up later today and tomorrow. So it's not going anywhere, so we're going to kind of get used to it here for the next few days.
Yeah, take me through time frames, et cetera, for people that, you know, going to work, picking up kids, dropping them off, all that stuff. What do you have a time period on heavier bands of rain or not really?
Not really. It's kind of hard to say, especially right now. We already got showers moving into the city, the general area right now. It's going to be off and on for the rest of the afternoon and evening. Hard to say when specifically one time we'll see heavy rain or not. It's just we're in that environmental pattern where we can see locally heavy rainfall that could lead to flash flooding that could last all the way through the evening and again during the day tomorrow.
And what is it that's causing this?
We got a frontal boundary down in our area. Now, this is different from what we saw recently with some of the heavier rain. Now that we have a frontal boundary here that's causing some of the lift to cause these types of showers, more widespread coverage, we have a greater chance of what we call isolated to localized flash flooding. So this front in the vicinity, an ample amount of Gulf moisture, all in combination, causes these greater coverage in showers and storms.
This has anything to do with the cold front coming through or not?
It does. With this localized boundary stationary around our local area, this is helping to really provide more coverage. So more so, it's going to be the front itself that's causing this type of coverage.
And are we in a situation where this could allow for any kind of training or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. In this type of environment, yeah, absolutely. That's where we could get a lot of heavy rain that drop at one time. That could lead to us less flash flooding concerns.
Not what I wanted to hear at all, Kevin, but the weekend's looking good in the tropics, quiet.
Tropics are quiet, and the weekend is looking a lot better. We're going to actually have a little bit drier air later towards the weekend and getting into next week. So fingers crossed, let's get through this rainy pattern and get it all over with, and hopefully we'll see a little bit better weather as we get towards next week.
And tropics, you can sound the all clear for the next 7 days?
It looks like it. Latest forecast from the National Hurricane Center doesn't have any direct impacts from any system towards our local area. So good news there. Let's just hope we can keep it that way for the rest of the season.
That'll get us till the 11th. I'll take it a week at a time. Thank you, Kevin Gilmore, National Weather Service. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Keith Hinckley, president of Plaquemines Parish, about the dreaded saltwater wedge. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us, WWL. 8:46, 14 till 9. I'll stop the world, or at least I'll stop the saltwater wedge. Hopefully, Keith Hinckley joins us, president of Plaquemines Parish. How you doing, Keith?
Good. Just getting off the phone. Are they still on the phone with GOSEP, just having our weekly phone calls and talking about saltwater?
Well, remember this. If it wasn't that, it'd be something else.
And we don't want to talk about that.
No, we don't. And look, I just got off the horn with the National Weather Service, and they tell me they're all clear for 7 more days, so we'll take it. They'll bring us till September the 11th, right?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Seven days at a time. Tell me about the saltwater wedge and how it compares to last year. I guess compare and contrast, if you can, Keith.
Well, you know, the one good thing is that we're later in the year. This year, you know, last year we started June 13th, and this year, you know, we're in the middle of it right now. But where we were last year, Tommy, we were way behind the eight ball. You know, we were having to set up facilities, get them back up and running, having to find out where you get ROs, you know, the reverse osmosis, filter systems. This year, we knew all of that. We knew where the machines are and were, so we were able to expedite and procure them at a very a real quick fashion and a real quick matter. So right now, all of the ROs on the areas that could potentially be affected, say like in Boothville, Port Sulphur, and Point Lahash, the ROs are connected electrically. The water, you know, the piping is connected. We're going through water testing right now with all three of those facilities. Boothville and Port Sulphur today, they're getting water testing, and then Point Lahash will be tested tomorrow.
Is there any extra salinity in the water for Plaquemines Parish at all, east or west bank, north, south?
Run that by me again?
Any extra salinity in the water above a normal but still acceptable in either east or west bank, north or south Plaquemines?
In Boothville, you know, it's completely inundated with the salt water. The column is at Boothville.
Oh, wait, let me clear that up. Keith, I might have misled you. I mean in the system itself, in the drinking water.
Oh, no. In the drinking water, the salinity levels are way below the acceptable. We're in like the 80s and the 90s in Boothville, and when you have to put out a water advisory, it has to be up to 250.
Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to know. Yeah. I was just curious about that.
But there's no salinities in our drinking water at no facility in Plaquemines Parish. And that was our goal. So that this year, and you know, it's like I keep saying, it's like I knew this was, I just felt it, that it was going to happen again this year. And our goal this year was to not let our residents get affected by the salinity levels in the drinking water. And up to this date right now, up to this moment, we're accomplishing that.
So what is GOSEP and the Corps telling you about advancement of this, or underwater sills, or any reverse osmosis needed for us? Much like a hovering spaceship, the gray clouds have moved in over the downtown area. Kevin Gilmore joins us now, meteorologist at the National Weather Service. And Kevin, good morning, first of all, to you. How you doing?
Hey, doing good, Tommy. How are you?
I'm all right. I remember back in the day where it rained and all we had to do was say, well, it's going to rain, be careful, put the windshield wipers on and all that. But now it seems like the rains are more intense. The big catch basins maybe aren't maintained as well. Parking on a neutral ground. It ain't like it used to be, is it, Kevin?
No, definitely not. We're definitely in this rainy pattern, and we got a lot more of these showers and storm chances coming up later today and tomorrow. So it's not going anywhere, so we're going to kind of get used to it here for the next few days.
Yeah, take me through time frames, et cetera, for people that, you know, going to work, picking up kids, dropping them off, all that stuff. What do you have a time period on heavier bands of rain or not really?
Not really. It's kind of hard to say, especially right now. We already got showers moving into the city, the general area right now. It's going to be off and on for the rest of the afternoon and evening. Hard to say when specifically one time we'll see heavy rain or not. It's just we're in that environmental pattern where we can see locally heavy rainfall that could lead to flash flooding that could last all the way through the evening and again during the day tomorrow.
And what is it that's causing this?
We got a frontal boundary down in our area now. This is different from what we saw recently with some of the heavier rain. Now that we have a frontal boundary here that's causing some of the lift to cause these types of showers, more widespread coverage, we have a greater chance of what would be what we call isolated to localized flash flooding. So this front in the vicinity, an ample amount of Gulf moisture, all in combination, causes these greater coverage in showers and storms.
This has anything to do with the cold front coming through or not?
It does. With this localized boundary stationary around our local area, this is helping to really provide more coverage. So more so, it's going to be the front itself that's causing this type of coverage.
And are we in a situation where this could allow for any kind of training or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. In this type of environment, yeah, absolutely. That's where we could get a lot of heavy rain that drop at one time. That could lead to those localized flash flooding concerns.
Not what I wanted to hear at all, Kevin, but the weekend's looking good in the tropics, quiet.
Tropics are quiet, and the weekend is looking a lot better. We're going to actually have a little bit drier air later towards the weekend and getting into next week. So fingers crossed, let's get through this rainy pattern and get it all over with, and hopefully we'll see a little bit better weather as we get towards next week.
And tropics, you can sound the all clear for the next 7 days?
It looks like it. The latest forecast from the National Hurricane Center doesn't have any direct impacts from any system towards our local area, so good news there. Let's just hope we can keep it that way for the rest of the season.
That'll get us till the 11th. I'll take it a week at a time. Thank you, Kevin Gilmore, National Weather Service. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Keith Hinckley, president of Plaquemines Parish, about the dreaded saltwater wedge. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us, WWL. 8:46, 14 till 9, I'll stop the world, or at least I'll stop the saltwater wedge, hopefully. Keith Hinckley joins us, president of Plaquemines Parish. How you doing, Keith?
Good, just getting off the phone. Are they still on the phone with GOSEP, just having our weekly phone calls just and talking about saltwater?
Well, remember this, if it wasn't that, it'd be something else.
And we don't want to talk about that.
No, we don't. And look, I just got off the horn with the National Weather Service, and they tell me they're all clear for 7 more days, so we'll take it. They'll bring us till September the 11th, right?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Seven days at a time. Tell me about the saltwater wedge and how it compares to last year. I guess compare and contrast, if you can, Keith.
Well, you know, the one good thing is that we're later in the year. This year, you know, last year we started June 13th, and this year, you know, we're in the middle of it right now. But where we were last year, Tommy, we were way behind the eight ball. You know, we were having to set up facilities, get them back up and running, having to find out where you get ROs, you know, the reverse osmosis, filter systems. This year, we knew all of that. We knew where the machines are and were, so we were able to expedite and procure them at a very a real quick fashion and a real quick matter. So right now, all of the ROs on the areas that could potentially be affected, say like in Boothville, Port Sulphur, and Point Lahash, the ROs are connected electrically. The water, you know, the piping is connected. We're going through water testing right now with all three of those facilities. Boothville and Port Sulphur today, they're getting water testing, and then Point Lahash will be tested tomorrow.
Is there any extra salinity in the water for Plaquemines Parish at all, east or west bank, north, south?
Run that by me again?
Any extra salinity in the water above a normal but still acceptable in either east or west bank, north or south Plaquemines?
In Boothville, you know, it's completely inundated with the salt water. The column is at Boothville.
Oh, wait, let me clear that up. Keith, I might have misled you. I mean in the system itself, in the drinking water.
Oh, no. In the drinking water, the salinity levels are way below the acceptable. I mean, we're in like the 80s and the 90s in Boothville, and when you have to put out a water advisory, it has to be up to 250.
Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to know. Yeah. I was just curious about that.
But there's no salinities in our drinking water at no facility in Plaquemines Parish. And that was our goal. So that this year, and you know, it's like I keep saying, it's like I knew this was, I just felt it, that it was going to happen again this year. And our goal this year was to not let our residents get affected by the salinity levels in the drinking water. And up to this date right now, up to this moment, we're accomplishing that.
So what is GOSEP and the Corps telling you about advancement of this, or underwater sills, or any reverse osmosis needed further up?
Well, you know, here's this morning just on our call, the sill is, they're supposed to start building the sill at mile 64. It's slated for September the 10th. They're trying to work with the contractor to get him to get the contract out there sooner. And they'll bring it up to a negative 55 like they did last year, the second time around, with the opening in the middle for shipping industry. So that's happening. And I believe, you know, they're feeling confident. Once that sill is up, then the Bell Chase facility in North will be okay. We'll be supported, and we won't have to worry about the salinity levels in those areas. And when you can keep it away from Bell Chase and our northernmost East Bank facilities, then you're protecting St. Bernard Parish, Orleans Parish, and you're also protecting Jefferson Parish.
I saw a quote from Mitch Jurisich, and I live right down the street from his son. I was wondering if this has anything to do with oysters at all or not. Might be a dumb question, but I've asked him before, Keith.
No, I mean, you know, Mitch is in the oyster business and industry. I didn't hear his answer on that, but
He didn't say anything about it at all. I was just curious about that because I was talking yesterday with Tommy Stanovich about off-bottom oysters, and I was just curious about that. Well, but I guess, if anything, the salinity would help with oysters, right?
You know what? One of the things I've learned, and I hate to say this word, with that other project that's going on or trying to go on further south on the West Bank, is that too much salinity is not good for the oyster industry. So there has to be a balance on that as well. So this salt water is not necessarily, in my understanding, Tommy, the best thing in the world for oysters.
And you're not an oysterman. I didn't mean to bring you down that road at all. Speaking of down the road, let's talk about LNG plant and traffic. And I was kidding yesterday, half kidding, about Alvin Kamara putting his house on the market, that it may not be about contract. It might be about traffic. That he figured, you know what, enough of this. What is the situation, first of all, with the bridge and then with the completion on the LNG plant and easing up of traffic in Bell Chase? And on all, well, from there, look, all the way up.
Yeah, real fast on Alvin Kamara. He lives, you know, in the parks of Plaquemines. My son lives in there. And there's a sign in the front yard. It's Alvin Kamara Contractors. So he made the comment yesterday that he does dabble in development. So it's not necessarily, I don't believe, you know, I don't know anything about the same. But I feel comfortable that it's not necessarily. Look, when you live off of Woodland Highway, you never get into the traffic.
That's true. Actually, unless you down to the post office where I've seen him before. But anyway, I was just half kidding about that. Tell me about the bridge. Where we stand on that?
Well, it looks like there's somewhere in the middle of this is just an observation on my part. You know, they've opened up the two northbound approaches. I don't know if they're letting things settle down or if they're waiting for DOTD to review their plan on how they want to fix it. I'm sure you've seen that, haven't you? It's sitting there with the Visqueen covering up the work that they've done to get to this point.
Yesterday, they were pressure washing something. I don't know what the hell they were doing.
Tell
me about the LNG plant. When is construction expected to wrap up on that? Do you know?
I don't know quite hard. You know, you hear different stories. You've heard first quarter of 25 somewhere, you know, towards the it's sometime next year it'll wrap up. Now, it's my understanding, as the year goes, we've seen the peak of the contractors and the workers in Plaquemines Parish. So I truly believe now, from this point forward, you're going to see a gradual downfall in the traffic.
I have sensed that, Keith. I don't know if it was my imagination or not.
Yeah.
All right, anything else?
I felt it myself, yeah.
Anything else?
Look, I'm out in the traffic, too, you know. So,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, you don't get it. You don't get the. I've never seen a police escort with you behind.
No.
Anything else, real quick, before you go? Anything about Plaquemines?
All good, Tommy. I appreciate the opportunity here to speak with you, and I just want to assure and let the residents of Plaquemines Parish know that we're well in front of this here, and we'll continue to work hard for them.
Thank you, Keith. Got to run. 8:55 traffic now. WWL. 8:46, 14 till 9. I'll stop the world, or at least I'll stop the saltwater wedge. Hopefully, Keith Hinckley joins us, president of Plaquemines Parish. How you doing, Keith?
Good. Just getting off the phone. Are they still on the phone with GOSEP, just having our weekly phone calls and talking about saltwater?
Well, remember this. If it wasn't that, it'd be something else.
And we don't want to talk about that.
No, we don't. And look, I just got off the horn with the National Weather Service, and they tell me they're all clear for 7 more days, so we'll take it. They'll bring us till September the 11th, right?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Seven days at a time. Tell me about the saltwater wedge and how it compares to last year. I guess compare and contrast, if you can, Keith.
Well, you know, the one good thing is that we're later in the year. This year, you know, last year we started June 13th, and this year, you know, we're in the middle of it right now. But where we were last year, Tommy, we were way behind the eight ball. You know, we were having to set up facilities, get them back up and running, having to find out where you get ROs, you know, the reverse osmosis, filter systems. This year, we knew all of that. We knew where the machines are and were, so we were able to expedite and procure them at a very a real quick fashion and a real quick matter. So right now, all of the ROs on the areas that could potentially be affected, say like in Boothville, Port Sulphur, and Point Lahash, the ROs are connected electrically. The water, you know, the piping is connected. We're going through water testing right now with all three of those facilities. Boothville and Port Sulphur today, they're getting water testing, and then Point Lahash will be tested tomorrow.
Is there any extra salinity in the water for Plaquemines Parish at all, east or west bank, north, south?
Run that by me again?
Any extra salinity in the water above a normal but still acceptable in either east or west bank, north or south Plaquemines?
In Boothville, you know, it's completely inundated with the salt water. The column is at Boothville.
Wait, let me clear that up. Keith, I might have misled you. I mean in the system itself, in the drinking water.
Oh, no. In the drinking water, the salinity levels are way below the acceptable. We're in like the 80s and the 90s in Boothville, and when you have to put out a water advisory, it has to be up to 250.
Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to know. Yeah. I was just curious about that.
Yeah.
But
there's no salinities in our drinking water at no facility in Plaquemines Parish. And that was our goal. So that this year, and you know, it's like I keep saying, it's like I knew this was, I just felt it, that it was going to happen again this year. And our goal this year was to not let our residents get affected by the salinity levels in the drinking water. And up to this date right now, up to this moment, we're accomplishing that.
So what is GOSEP and the Corps telling you about advancement of this, or underwater sills, or any reverse osmosis needed further up?
Well, you know, here's this morning just on our call, the sill is, they're supposed to start building the sill at mile 64. It's slated for September the 10th. They're trying to work with the contractor to get the contract out there sooner, and they'll bring it up to a negative 55 like they did last year, the second time around with the opening in the middle for shipping industry. So that's happening. And I believe, you know, they're feeling confident. Once that sill is up, then the Bell Chase facility in North will be okay. We'll be supported, and we won't have to worry about the salinity levels in those areas. And when you can keep it away from Bell Chase and our northernmost East Bank facilities, then you're protecting St. Bernard Parish, Orleans Parish,
and you're also protecting Jefferson Parish.
I saw a quote from Mitch Jurisich, and I live right down the street from his son. I was wondering if this has anything to do with oysters at all or not. Might be a dumb question, no. But I've asked him before, Keith.
No, I mean, Mitch is in the oyster business, right, and industry. I didn't hear his answer on that, but
He didn't say anything about it at all. I was just curious about that because I was talking yesterday with Tommy Stanovich about off-bottom oysters, and I was just curious about that. Well, but I guess, if anything, the salinity would help with oysters, right?
One of the things I've learned, and I hate to say this word, with that other project that's going on or trying to go on further south on the West Bank, is that too much salinity is not good for the oyster industry. So there has to be a balance on that as well. So this salt water is not necessarily, in my understanding, Tommy, the best thing in the world for oysters.
And you're not an oysterman. I didn't mean to bring you down that road at all. Speaking of down the road, let's talk about LNG plant and traffic. And I was kidding yesterday, half kidding, about Alvin Kamara putting his house on the market, that it may not be about contract. It might be about traffic. That he figured, you know what, enough of this. What is the situation, first of all, with the bridge and then with the completion on the LNG plant and easing up of traffic in Belchase? And on all, well, from there look, all the way up.
Yeah, real fast on Alvin Kamara. He lives, in the parks of Plaquemines. So my son lives in there. And there's a sign in the front yard. It's Alvin Kamara Contractors. So he made the comment yesterday that he does dabble in development. So it's not necessarily, I don't believe, anything about the same. But I feel comfortable that it's not necessarily. Look, when you live off of Woodland Highway, you never get into the traffic.
That's true. Unless you go down to the post office where I've seen him before. But anyway, I was just half kidding about that. Tell me about the bridge. Where we stand on that?
Well, it looks like there's somewhere in the middle of, this is just an observation on my part, they've opened up the two northbound approaches. I don't know if they're letting things settle down or they're waiting for DOTD to review their plan on how they want to fix it. I'm sure you've seen that, haven't you?
It's
sitting there with the Visqueen covering up the work that they've done to get to this point.
Yesterday they were pressure washing something. I don't know what the hell they were doing.
Tell
me about the LNG plant. When is construction expected to wrap up on that? Do you know?
I don't know quite hard. You hear different stories. You've heard first quarter of 2025 somewhere. Towards the it's sometime next year it'll wrap up. Now it's my understanding as the year goes, we've seen the peak of the contractors and the workers in Plaquemines Parish. So I truly believe now, from this point forward, you're going to see a gradual downfall in the traffic.
I have sensed that, Keith. I don't know if it was my imagination or not.
Yeah.
All right, anything else?
I felt it myself, yeah.
Anything else?
Look, I'm out in the traffic, too,
right. Yeah, you don't get the. I've never seen a police escort with you behind it. Anything else, real quick, before you go? Anything about Plaquemines?
All good, Tommy. I appreciate the opportunity here to speak with you, and I just want to assure and let the residents of Plaquemines Parish know that we're well in front of this here, and we'll continue to work hard for them.
Thank you, Keith. Got to run. 8:55 traffic now. WWL.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.